Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Monday, March 25th, 2024. And our top story today, a plan to treat troubled veterans. And joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Colonel Jim Seward is with the Veterans Justice Commission. Jim, it is so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Yeah, again, another important topic. We think very highly of our veterans, and we want to make sure that they get the treatment and the services that they need. But Jim, let's talk about the Veterans Justice Commission. And it has, I want to go back to the inception and the creation of that. How was it, or why was it created? Talk a little bit about the think tank behind it.
Thank you, Jeff. In 2020, the Council on Criminal Justice, which is a nonpartisan and nonprofit think tank and membership organization, was looking at the number of veterans who are incarcerated across our country and determined that it was necessary to do an evaluation or a global study of the system, the criminal justice system, the Department of Defense, and the VA. In August of 2022, that commission launched as the Veterans Justice Commission with Secretary Chuck Hagel, former Secretary of Defense, as chair, and also with former Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta. There's 13 other amazing commissioners on that commission, and they're studying the nature and extent of veterans in the criminal justice system and making evidence-based recommendations to enhance the health, safety, and justice of our nation's veterans.
And thanks for that, Jim. And look, I know that our veterans, there's quite a few of them dating all the way back to World War II, but 200,000 is a number that I've seen kind of estimated that are incarcerated in U.S. prisons. And you know, we've talked on this network about veteran mental health, getting veterans care. Any thoughts about why that number seems so high?
You know, Jeff, after World War II, there was a big spike in the number of veterans that were incarcerated across the country. In 1952, there was a study published that examined 11 prisons. And in those 11 prisons, they found a third of all the prisoners were veterans. After Vietnam, we saw numbers as high as 24% of the nation's incarcerated were veterans. One of the things we do at the Council on Criminal Justice is try to tackle extremely difficult questions about our justice system and ones that haven't been explored elsewhere. This is really a question or a study that hasn't been completed before. And as we look at that number of 200,000 veterans incarcerated, that's the most recent data our country has, and it's from 2011. The Council on Criminal Justice and the Veterans Justice Commission thought it was time to update those numbers and really try to take a look at, is there a way to bend that curve down so that 20 years after the two latest conflicts ended, we could have fewer veterans in prison than World War II and Vietnam.
And Jim, do we have an idea just based on that 2011 study? Like, is this true? You know, I think we've learned a lot since 2011 about the mental health, the post-traumatic stress disorder. But do we know the causation as for the 200,000 veterans? Like, is it directly related to combat service, for example, or being part of a major event that maybe hurt them in some way?
So the research shows that the post 9/11 veteran is the most at risk cohort when compared to the previous conflicts or wars. The post 9/11 veteran, as you will recall, rotated in and out of combat zones over and over and over again. And the research shows that those multiple deployments are what lead to PTSD, and PTSD can be associated with criminal justice involvement. We also know that the post 9/11 veteran is more diverse, more younger, more female, and the research shows that it's all of those factors together that put them at a higher risk.
Yeah, and last question before we go to commercial break. And I know the VA, we've spoken with, we've interviewed people at the VA. This, the mental acuity and the mental health and the PTSD, this is a major initiative for them. And I think for Congress as well. I mean, the resources are there, I would think, Jim. Is that what you're finding to support not only getting or surveying and trying to find the accurate number, but also getting these people the resources they need in order to maybe prevent, ending up in the criminal justice system.
The Veterans Justice Commission was very adamant that they wanted to first examine transition from the military, to your exact point, to try to prevent people from becoming justice involved. We know that because of policy developments and changes in our nation, that about 750,000 veterans since Vietnam have left the military with a bad paper discharge called an other than honorable discharge. That typically takes away all of those mental health benefits. The VA has made some recent changes for emergencies, suicidal emergencies, to try to get 90 days of mental health treatment. But when we compare the system that we have for veterans to the US criminal justice system, we see they're vastly different. In the United States, in criminal justice, we try to apply the resources to those who are most likely to offend or reoffend. In the military and with the VA regulations, we've really done the opposite, where we take the benefits away from that mental health care and health care treatment, disability. We take those benefits away from those who have offended or are likely to offend. Going one step further, 20 some years ago in the United States, we made a policy decision that we would no longer give health care from the VA to those who are incarcerated. What does that mean? That means if Jim is arrested, put in county jail while he's receiving PTSD treatment from the VA, that treatment has to stop until Jim gets out of prison or jail. That's the exact opposite thing that we as citizens in America want to happen. We want that individual to be treated because we know they're going to get out eventually, and we want them to leave prison or jail ready to transition into our communities.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I need to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some policy decisions that need to be made and a lot more. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms, especially for the smaller businesses? I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Well, Jim, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you hanging around for segment number two this morning.
Absolutely. It's my honor.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly our honor. And, you know, as we were talking about this last segment, you know, it just, there's so much that kind of goes into this decision-making. And you talked about trying to update that number, which in 2011 was 200,000. Talk a little bit about getting the more accurate number and how long will that take to actually figure out what the true population of veterans that are incarcerated may be.
Thanks, Jeff. 45 years ago, President Carter signed a presidential memorandum and said, we don't have very good information on our veterans who are incarcerated in the U.S. We really need to start tracking that and keeping track of that. And it's sad to say we still don't have that information. And it's very, very difficult to get. Most states are keeping track of that information. Many of them are developing programs for veterans in their prisons. Obtaining that information is quite a task. And one of the recommendations that the commission made is for a National Center on Veterans Justice to be a data clearinghouse. So those states have a place to send that information that can be collected. Right now, we don't know how many veterans are on probation or parole. We don't even know how many veterans are in veterans treatment courts today.
Yeah. So, I mean, to solve a problem, you need to know how big the problem is. And assuming that that infrastructure can be built to share the data, let's talk about some policy or initiatives. Now, let's assume that the population is around 200,000 veterans. We need to continue to get them treatment so that they're better citizens after their incarceration. But talk about some of the policy initiatives that the commission is thinking about. Maybe they're not yet being implemented, but they're certainly thinking about to create maybe better justice for our veterans.
Thank you, Jeff. As you know, drug courts and veterans treatment courts are a very welcome addition to our criminal justice system across America. As the commission was working last year on the front end of the criminal justice system to try to catch those veterans as they're entering the system, they looked at the data on veterans treatment courts in the U.S. Only 14% of our counties in America have a veterans treatment court. And that's because most counties are too small. Of the 19,500 counties we have in America, 76% of those counties are under 5,000 people. Economies of scale don't allow for them to build the infrastructure to have a full-fledged veterans treatment court. The commission released recommendations in the spring of 2023, and the second recommendation called for alternatives to prosecution and incarceration. From that recommendation, they appointed a task force, a national task force, to develop a model policy framework. That model policy framework was taken to the American Legislative Exchange Council, and they adopted a model policy that's been rolled out to all the states across the U.S. that really works to divert veterans from incarceration and treat them with probation and evidence-based policies and practices. Right now, that is being studied in legislatures across the country. There's work being done right now in Nebraska. It looks like there's a good chance that will pass and be the first state that adopts that this year. It's also being shared with national organizations across the country. If we can find a way to supplement veterans treatment courts so that every judge in the country with criminal justice jurisdiction can treat a veteran coming into their court as if they had a veterans treatment court, we stand to capture more of the veterans that are falling through the cracks. The Department of Justice estimates that only 10 to 15% of the veterans working through the system will be caught in a veterans treatment court and treated. We've put forward this Veterans Justice Act and the model policy to try to be a solution for states to capture those other veterans.
Last question, Jim, and I wish I could, we'll bring you back to talk more about this on a future date, but what about, as I'm listening to you talk about this, there's certainly the resources that are needed, adoption of the model by different legislatures and different jurisdictions. But what about educating, some of our veterans, or a lot of our veterans have difficulty transitioning back to civilian life. Maybe it's transitioning to college or another vocation, getting a job. Do we need to do it? And maybe some of that is the impetus, along with PTSD and some of the challenges for winding up on the wrong side of the law. Is there education or transition services that are needed to help make that a more successful transition back into civilian life?
Absolutely, Jeff. You really hit the nail on the head. Just a couple of weeks ago, the commission released its recommendations on transition from military to civilian life. Number one, they said it really needs to become a core priority of the Department of Defense. And they set forth a whole list of implementation steps to try to improve that so that fewer veterans would leave the military and be struggling in their communities. Recent studies by folks like the Pew Charitable Trust show that upwards of 44% of our veterans are struggling when they transition. Many times that has to do with mental health and substance use disorder, but it may be as simple as employment or lack of employment. There are about 60,000 organizations in the United States that are working to help veterans in one space or another. However, when you look at transition, it tends to be focused on direct services. And so the Veterans Justice Commission tried to focus on the policy gaps at the presidential, executive, and legislative levels. What things could be changed in the VA to improve that transition? What things could be changed at the Department of Defense? And those recommendations are on our website. I know you said you'll be sharing that on the report entitled Transition.
Yeah. Again, this it seems like that, you when you're working a problem, and I'll tell you this, when you're working a problem, you want to solve it from both ends, preemptively, but also for those that are currently challenged. And I think, education probably is a big part of that. Jim, we're going to have to leave it there. Great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. And we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you.
That wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more, all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and, of course, another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.